join Aaron Russell on tonight's conversation, a lawyer we've had on to talk about a myriad of topics, from copyright and trademark to online defamation. It's the latter of the three we'll focus on tonight. Aaron, thanks for giving us some time here on a Saturday evening.
Hi, John. Thanks for having me.
I find online defamation to be a fascinating topic, simply because as someone who works in the world of radio and TV, First Amendment has been core to my studies as when I was in college and what we do here in media. And one of my favorite parts about studying the First Amendment, which of course guarantees a lot of rights, but of course free speech, is how that has been tested and evolved through the many different courses of media that are around. Obviously, the latest is how we deal with speech online, but we've had to adjust and have court cases about TV, about radio, about pamphlets going back to the 18th century. Does that fascinate you as well, the evolution and still core principles of the First Amendment, despite the mechanisms of speech changing so drastically since it was implemented?
Absolutely. And it impacts the current economy of opinion that we live in a lot of ways.
Yeah. I think the marketplace of ideas is a fascinating study and still remains a bedrock principle of what our country is. The idea that as many different opinions as possible and from all sorts of ranges on the spectrum, and anything that chills speech should be looked at with skepticism. But that doesn't mean, Aaron, we can say whatever we want at any time we want, right?
Right.
What are some interesting aspects of the online world to you as it pertains to the First Amendment?
Well, when you start talking about things like online reviews or Facebook groups and social media, I think people have harsh opinions sometimes. And when their opinions, even if they're defamatory opinions, I think that's fine. And I'm not a fan of chilling speech. However, there are a lot of instances where people use online forums, online reviews, to do harm and to say things that are false, and they're false in a way that is defamatory. And there has to be legal recourse for that when that occurs.
I know a lot of people will say, well, it's my First Amendment right to say whatever I want. There's a lot of complexities with that statement. First of all, private companies and consequences for your speech are totally within the right of the marketplace figuring itself out, right? You say something terrible and someone at work doesn't like it, they can fire you. They're a private employer. Like, that's not a limit of free speech. And also in this defamation world, I mean, a lot of this is, correct me if I'm wrong, Aaron, this is all settled in the civil courts. This isn't the government coming and arrest you for leaving a negative online review. This is a civil dispute between two parties, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Defamation is not a crime. But when people leave defamatory reviews with the intent to harm a person or a business, or if they leave comments or make statements that fall into certain legal categories, then the person that they're talking about or the business they're talking about does have legal recourse in civil court to get damages.
Before we dive into some of these interesting cases, do you often hear from clients, well, wait, it's my right to say what I just said, and maybe unaware that this is a field of law that can cost people a lot of money?
All the time. I get a lot of calls from people who are surprised that they're getting a legal threat, or they just want to double check because someone has suggested they could be sued. And when they tell me what they said, I have to caution them that it's actionable. And so I find that people are very often surprised.
Again, the police aren't coming to arrest you. The government isn't telling you not to say it. But this is a civil recourse in defamation. One article that came up in the news this week, I believe, from my colleagues at Block Club Chicago, I wanted just to start there because it's so fresh in my mind. And it's fresh in a lot of our minds. What's happening with the Department of Homeland Security and ICE, that's not something we're going to comment on or make value judgment on this show, although we talk about it throughout the week and we welcome all sides of the spectrum of the conversation here on WGN. But just from an online defamation standpoint, there was a story out of the Irving Park neighborhood of a pretty popular confectionery, like a chocolatier shop, that has been targeted, she says, by quote-unquote trolls, leaving negative reviews online after she, on the front of her store, put a sign that says, "Everyone is welcome here except ICE." And she has noted that now some people are leaving negative online reviews, not only saying, "I disagree with your ICE stance," but what she is saying, they are making up stuff that isn't true, like that there's vermin in the chocolatier's shop and that the service was terrible, even though she knows or she claims that those people haven't been there. Does that delve into the world of online defamation for someone to flat out lie about something in the store that isn't happening?
Absolutely. Especially you mentioned the vermin comment, and to suggest that a business, especially a food related business, has vermin is actionable defamation per se. And I think also when you have it happening in this context where people are, you know, sort of just doing review bombing, and they probably were never even a customer, so they're just saying that and it's untrue. Then you also have, in my opinion, if I represented the chocolatier, that's evidence of intent. You were never a customer there. You never saw evidence of vermin. You can't possibly argue that you reasonably thought that your intent was to say something defamatory to damage this business.
There are review bombings that happen on both sides of the political spectrum. They become so commonplace that now a lot of these, whether it's Google reviews or Yelp, they know something like this is happening and they pause reviews for a while because they just want to recognize that obviously most people probably didn't actually visit the store. But Aaron, I have to admit, I never really thought that leaving a fake negative review could land me in trouble.
Yeah, well, when you're doing things, and you know, I think there's a difference too. Something can be an opinion. If you're talking about a restaurant and you say, I thought the service was bad, I thought the waitress was slow, I thought the food tasted bad. These are opinions, so they're not actionable. But when you cross the line and say a business did fraud, a business cheated you out of money, or a business has vermin, or things like that that are false, you're crossing a line into defamatory speech that is very difficult, if impossible, to defend, and where the business or the person can come back and say that's defamation per se. Damages are presumed. And even if the chocolate shop hasn't immediately lost money in the short term, a review like that saying they have vermin, someone could see that and cancel an order in the future. We're coming up on the holidays. I presume this is a busy time for such a business. If the business owner were to be able to show that someone saw that review and gave it some sort of credence, and they lost a customer or lost a big order, that would push it even further towards something that might be worth pursuing in court.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to ask next, because she says in the immediate, she's actually done well. A lot of people have come in to support her and her message and against the quote unquote trolls that she says are leaving fake reviews. I wondered, and you, I think you answered this, but maybe you could expand a bit, the idea of, well, maybe she's making more money right now. What really is the harm? Does someone who is defamed have to show real damages now? Or when you use the term presumed damages, does that mean just the average person could assume that down the line that person could suffer based on the negative review? Like, what's the standard if this ever made it to court?
So when we talk about defamation per se, there's a category of defamation per se where you're criticizing someone's profession or their ability in the profession. With a business, you're questioning the credibility of their business practices. So for a chocolate shop to say that they have vermin is obviously intended to have people think that it's unclean, that the lady who runs it is not keeping the place sanitary, and to get people to not buy the chocolate. And like you said, there may be a groundswell right now of initial support, but we don't know that that'll be sustained. And we don't know that in the next year, before the statute of limitations expires, that it won't affect sales or her ability to renew her lease or obtain credit or enter into a business agreement with some vendor or some other company. There can be other impacts that maybe wouldn't be felt in the short term.
Right. And again, we are waxing poetic about a situation that's real, but going into hypothetical land here as well, which is why I'm not using too many specifics here. You can read the story at blockclubchicago.org. Aaron and I are kind of commenting generally on this topic. But I wonder if, when we get these bombs of negative reviews, if business owners, one, don't know that they perhaps have legal rights here or could get some damages back, or two, just don't pursue it because it seems like it would be too big of a hassle for too little of a return. Any thoughts on that?
I do. I think sometimes people, and when I consult with people about these type of reviews, I think they think if it looks crazy enough, they think that anyone who reads it is going to see that they maybe form an opinion that the person who wrote the negative review has other motives and it's not really true. I think some people are concerned about cost and about hiring lawyers. And some people are concerned that if they pursue legal action against someone who's writing kind of crazy reviews or making crazy comments, they're afraid that it'll exacerbate the behavior and make things worse.
Good point, right? Like, I mean, then all of a sudden more reviews could come in or other actions that could be more detrimental if it turns out that this person is suing another person. But you kind of listed a bunch of things about, well, you don't know if, going back to the chocolatier example, maybe someone in the future would cancel a big order. Maybe they'd lose their lease because of X, Y, or Z, or their credit. I mean, as a lawyer yourself who's done some of these cases, how do you present, I mean, do you kind of like run up a set total of presumed dollars that could be lost and try and go for like the biggest amount? Like, how do you walk through that as a lawyer?
Well, you look at what you can prove. You look at what's reasonable. There are going to be things that, you know, there's always things, there's the wish list. And, you know, if this chocolate shop was my client, obviously you hope they don't sustain great damage. Because another thing to remember is that the commenter may not be a solvent person. Suing people isn't great when they don't have money. You can get a giant judgment against someone, and if they don't have anything, it's not worth anything, and then you've expended the attorney's fees to pursue the judgment. And really, at that point, then the only value of the judgment, if you get it against a person who doesn't have any money, is that you kind of feel publicly vindicated, that a court has said, hey, this wasn't true, it was defamation, and this person who made this untrue comment should be punished. But some people, you know, how much value does that have to the business owner? I guess the opinions on that can vary.
That's a good point you bring up. And then I'd also wonder, is there anyone that says, hey, Yelp or Google Reviews, you should be a party of this lawsuit. You need to come up with standards that show that people have been to the place to be able to leave a review. There's not enough policing of these reviews. Can you go after one of the companies that houses these reviews for allowing these sorts of reviews to happen? I know they have money.
They sure do, but there are federal laws that protect them from being sued for content that is posted on their platforms. So no, they cannot be sued. I mean, people don't try to name them, but the Stored Communications Act, and there's a couple other federal laws that address these things. And so no, there's no hope that then you could go ahead and sue Yelp or Google because someone left a review like that.
Is that this Section 130 that we've heard about in recent years that social media companies are able to use to say, hey, we're not publishers. We just have a marketplace of ideas before us. If we had to police every single comment, it would have a chilling effect. And in fact, it would just put us out of business.
Yes, it's Section 230. And yes, and that's their point. And they're saying, hey, we shouldn't have to moderate the content. And then that gets kind of into dangerous ground of then who are they going to silence? But at this point, the law says that they're not responsible for what's posted. So I've seen some recent cases where people try and they've named Meta and they've named Google in cases. But normally those parties are very quickly dismissed.
Interesting. Yeah, I was going to say for every negative fake review out there, how many of these cases end up in court? It's got to be infinitesimal, but is it a growing field? Like, are people becoming more aware of their rights to perhaps seek damages for this stuff?
I think they are, and we can come up with some creative solutions sometimes. You know, sometimes a letter to the person, if you know who they are, letting them know, you know, what they've done that's illegal and what can happen and that you are willing to sue them if they don't take it down or issue a retraction or whatever. You know, you can do that. And sometimes that'll scare people who, you know, in the moment they're hot and angry and they're writing stuff. And then later they get a letter from an attorney and they come to understand that they have exposure. Sometimes that can fix the problem for a reasonable amount of money.
I think that would fix the problem for a lot of people. I will say that because I think a lot of people post that review, they love the cause or they're really upset about a cause and, you know, it gets the best of all of us at some point. And I'm sure they go, okay, sorry, I will take it down. My bad. And maybe at the end of the day, that's worth the hour they paid the lawyer to be able to get that review taken down. Because of course, that review up costs probably more than an hour's worth of a lawyer's time in customers not coming. Aaron, we're just getting started. We have another half hour. Hang on the line with us. That's Aaron Russell from the Russell Firm out of Chicago. RussellFirmIP.com. where you can read more about all that they do. We'll have more with Aaron. Your questions, too, after this break in the news on WGN. Aaron Russell from the Russell Firm, RussellFirmIP.com. That's the website, Aaron, right? I got that correct?
Yep.
You do a lot of great work. We were talking about online defamation, and we brought up the example of the chocolatier and people leaving fake reviews, which happens a lot in a lot of political cases where a business takes a stand on something, and then a lot of people don't like that stand, so they leave fake reviews, some of them involving like, oh, it's vermin, or just plain lies, and how that can be defamation. You noted then that opinions don't rise to that level. And I think there's a great example that you sent along about a case of a lawyer out of Chicago who kind of put a stupid joke on the internet and got a slew of pushback from a lot of people, a lot of reviews of people that never used his services, right? These are people, I assume, Aaron, that never contracted him as a lawyer, but left their opinions on him based on what he said. And that case worked its way through the courts, right?
Yes, it did.
Talk us about this.
So, yeah, he made a comment and a lot of women took offense to that comment and went to his Facebook page. Some of them said words and wrote words, and some of them just left a one-star review with no further comment. But the court ended up saying, you know, look, these are just opinions, even if they didn't ever use him as a lawyer. And the court also ended up holding, and there's case law that says that a one-star review with nothing further, no words written, isn't even speech.
What do you mean by that?
It means that speech is me saying this guy's a bad lawyer and he's a crook, and just leaving a one-star review and not writing any words, that one star, that's not speech.
So it doesn't even enter the realm of defamation.
Right.
Oh, so someone can leave a one-star review as often as they want, and they're going to be A-okay. But when you start making opinions that are perhaps or are incorrect or defamatory, that's where you get into it. It's interesting, though, because I'm reading some of the reviews that were left. Some people said he's a disgrace to the U.S. judicial system. He's unethical and derogatory, a hypocrite. I mean, a lot of these people... I don't know. It's almost a stretch to know that as a fact about someone based on one joke they make. And I'm not defending his joke, but I guess I do find that interesting that the courts ultimately ruled that you could say those things about that person without maybe knowing the whole picture of that person. Do you kind of get what I'm getting at here, Aaron?
I do, and I know what you mean. And it's that thing that people, I think, underestimate sometimes how harsh opinions can be and still not be actionable. So... And my opinion that someone is a jerk or some of the other opinions that you mentioned, if that's someone's opinion, it may be harsh, but it is not a statement of fact that can be disproved.
I mean, someone left a review saying this guy is a biased and unprofessional attorney. And I just feel like, I mean, unless you used their service, I mean, I guess it'd be hard to prove. And again, there's a bunch of comments, so maybe some... I don't know, maybe one or two could have risen to that level. I don't know how they adjudicate it when it's so many different comments. In fact, maybe you could dive into this case a little bit deeper. Did this person sue one specific commenter? Like, how does that work in cases? Like, how do you have to bring up individual suits against each person that leaves a comment that you find to be defamatory?
Yes, and he did sue a number of women who commented. So... and some of them just left a one-star review. Others actually wrote things, but he did sue a group of women.
Okay. But the courts rule individually on each individual comment, of course, right?
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, in any defamation case, if I were to sue someone for making five different comments about me in five different places, then the court's going to examine. Maybe I might win on one or two, but not on others. So each defamatory statement is examined in itself.
I mean, one of the comments called him a racist, right? And that label can be incredibly detrimental to your business. And I'm just going to read the joke on air because you use it as you will. This is back in 2017. And this is when the travel ban was issued by the Trump administration. And this is certainly off color and not a great joke, but he said, "Did Trump put Ukraine on the travel ban list? We just cannot find a cleaning lady." Using a stereotype that a lot of Ukrainian women clean a lot of homes in the area, and he can't seem to find one. And oh my goodness, did Trump put Ukraine on the travel ban list? It's also just, I don't think, a good joke, first and foremost. But yeah, but to then say this person is a racist, a chauvinist, not professional, discriminates against other nationalities, terrible experience. I'm not trying to, I hate to try and defend this guy in this joke. I guess I'm just wondering, when does an opinion stretch too far into, well, now you clearly could not have known that based on this one statement this person made?
Well, the key with defamation is it has to be a false statement that's provably false. So, and I get a lot of calls where people say, so-and-so called me a racist and I want to sue them for defamation. And that's a little tough. It's an opinion, and it's an ugly opinion, and it's not comfortable to have that said. And sometimes it depends on the whole context of the entirety of the statement. So if someone writes a whole big long thing and not just one sentence, you always have to look at everything that was written in the whole post. But it does feel like that should be actionable. And normally that's just an opinion.
Well, that's interesting. So like if someone called me a racist online and I wanted to sue them for defamation, I have to prove to a preponderance of the evidence that I'm not? Like, what am I going to be bringing, like, personal examples, having people testify on my behalf, perhaps that know me, that I'm friends with from another race? Like, I mean, really, like, how does that actually play out in court?
Right, and it doesn't, because it's an opinion and it's tough. And if someone wanted me to, if you wanted me to sue someone for you for saying that, we would have to talk about, okay, how do we prove that? And also, another thing that comes into play, and it did not happen to my knowledge with the case with the attorney that we're talking about, so I'm not commenting on that. Mm-hmm. But what I remind people is when you sue someone for defamation, they get to respond.
Okay.
So, like, we got to know what that's going to look like. Mm. So in some cases where someone's criticized online and then they say, I want to sue them, I say, great, so what's going to get uncovered? Are we going to find a bunch of, if they're calling you a chauvinist and a woman hater, are they going to produce in discovery a bunch of text messages where you said awful things to some woman?
Right.
Because if that's the case, not only is that going to support their defense, but now you have caused a defamation case to be filed. It is a permanent public record. Nobody would have known you did that had you not sued this person. But now by bringing this lawsuit, you have brought some pretty ugly things about yourself to light, and you did it to yourself.
Yeah, a real self-own. Boy, that's an interesting
thing. Self-own.
That's an interesting thing, right? Yeah.
Every defamation case, you really have to look at it and say, okay, do you want to do this? Do you want to do this today, but will you still be glad you did it 5 years from now, 10 years from now, when it's a permanent public record that may have gotten media attention and maybe some not so nice things ended up coming out about you during the thing? Maybe you still even won, but is it going to be worth it to you later when people look back on it? And it's all because you chose to file the lawsuit, and that it's not a reason not to do it, but it's a reason I think that I do, and responsible attorneys caution people, if you do this, it's a public record forever.
Wow.
And things might come out that you wish hadn't. And so you've just got to be ready for that and okay with that. And then if that happens, you've kind of got to own it.
That's a great segue, I think, into the conversation about online dating and Facebook mm-hmm. groups where women compare men that they've maybe gone on dates with and try and warn or explain or show things that they have done on previous dates to maybe give evidence to women maybe not to date the person. That was the worst explanation of this case ever, Aaron. So I'll put you on pause for a moment. You'll explain it a lot better. When does defamation cross the line when it comes to online dating or people leaving essentially reviews of you on the internet? For another 10 minutes, so we got about 6 minutes left of content with Aaron Russell. It has flown by today, Aaron. We did get a text from someone saying, if it's defamation, you've got to prove harm. And I just wanted to make sure I responded back saying that it can be immediate harm or it could be presumed harm. But is that, just remind me again exactly what the level of harm you have to show for something to rise to defamation.
Well, it depends. So in cases where it's called defamation per quad, where you kind of have to put more of the pieces together to show the defamation, you do have to show actual damages. Mm. So if you were to say, I had a bunch of people over to my house last night in a conversation, let's say someone took $10,000 from your house, and then you were talking to a bunch of people about it, and you said, oh, Aaron was at my house last night. And your intention is obviously to suggest it might have been me that stole the $10,000. That could be defamatory, but you have to put together the whole story to show how it's defamatory. And that's called defamation per quad. And I would have to show actual damages, that I lost some money or some benefit. When it's defamation per se, it's a little more complicated because the damages are presumed. But there is case law that says you do have to show some harm. There are judges that say that the statement itself is the harm, and you don't have to prove anything further. But there's a long line of case law extending back into the 1970s that says, yes, even presumed damages, you do have to show something.
Okay, so Texter, I was absolutely wrong with what I wrote back to you, and Aaron Russell cleared it up. Very good. I apologize to the Texter. I thought I knew everything, and I don't. That shouldn't be any surprise to any listeners. Okay, got about 4.5 minutes left. This story could deserve more, and there's so many different wrinkles about what this guy sued for. But in essence, there are Facebook pages where women, and it's called Are We Dating the Same Guy, where they're hyper-local to specific neighborhoods. We got them in Chicago, too. Where women literally say, I'm about to go on a date with this guy. Has anyone gone on a date with this guy? And offered their thoughts. And usually it's probably benign. But some women share red flags or things from the text exchanges that they have with this person. And one guy got understandably upset and sued all sorts of things to try and win the case. Walk us just generally through how this works as it pertains to defamation.
So what in that lawsuit, what he sued for was a bunch of women on there and basically said he was bad to date, that he was a jerk and he was self-centered and he had a big ego and that he just talked about himself and a bunch of stuff. And, you know, he's just trying to impress you by spending money. And they just kind of shared their experiences of dating him and what they thought the negatives were. And he took offense, obviously, to that and sued not only the women who commented, but the Facebook group itself, which has a corporation or an LLC. And he also tried to sue Meta and some other corporate entities.
How'd that work out for him?
It didn't. none of it worked out. And those are all non-actionable opinions. And that's where we go back to what you and I were talking about earlier, which is when you look at civil case law, there's some opinions that can get pretty rough where you might say to yourself, I don't know, isn't that defamatory? And it's an opinion. Even if it's an opinion that is pretty ugly or pretty upsetting, it's still an opinion.
Even sharing screen grabs of text conversations is fair game?
Yes, people do that. I think that one of the other things that I believe that that particular lawsuit included was a claim of doxing, which is where you reveal enough about someone that they can be publicly identified by name or address or location. The judge didn't find that they had done that either, but people do share text messages. And that's where you get into that thing of if you want to sue somebody, you want to think first about what those text messages might look like when they come out.
You talked through Section 230, as you corrected me, I said 130 earlier, about that Facebook essentially is not a publisher. They're not going to look through every comment. Otherwise, it would shut down social media and it wouldn't exist. But the guy did make one sort of interesting argument, at least in my mind. He said, look, I have driven these posts about me have driven so much engagement that Facebook is making money off of me, my likeness. The judge shot that down as well. But at least I thought that was an interesting angle to take.
It is an interesting angle. I'll give them credit for trying. There are a couple of cases in federal courts, other places in the country where people are trying to go after Google and some of the larger platforms with similar arguments in different kinds of cases, like trademark cases. But basically, I believe the judge in this case just ultimately said you can't prove that, and they weren't getting revenue from it. Even if they were getting views or hits or more people joining, and also you have to prove that that was the purpose.
I think,
and there's no evidence that that was the purpose.
Yeah, and that makes sense too. I just to sum up kind of our whole conversation today. At first, I thought I was going to say something like, well, you got to be careful about what you post and, you know, you don't want to be sued for defamation. And I think that is true. But even saying that, I think, does step on the line of like, we don't want a chill speech. So I guess post things that are true, Aaron. Like, if you have an opinion and you believe you have a fact that is true, have at it. And we shouldn't chill speech anywhere beyond that. Or do you go further and say, no, do be careful about what you post, or are both things true?
Well, I think both things are true. And I think it depends on the person. So I tend to be very conservative, not politically, but in this way, you know, lawyers spend a lot of time telling people to be quiet. And I always say, you know, basically in this context, it's live by the sword, die by the sword. If you want to run hot opinions online and you think it's worth it and you think that your opinions have some kind of value or you really want to have them out there, okay, you have free speech rights to do that. But if you cross outside of that and you end up facing legal repercussions, well, then, you know, then that's the risk that you took from the beginning. Myself, I think that very often people are just so accustomed to giving their opinions about every little thing. I think that when tempers are running hot and things like that, it's just maybe the best time to holster your keyboard and maybe wait to write that opinion when you're a little more removed from the upsetting circumstance.
Well said. RussellFirmIP.com. Do you represent people that want to sue for defamation and that are being defamed?
I do both sides of it.
What number should people reach you at?
312-994-2424.
Aaron, great to chat. We'll do it again soon, okay?
Thanks. Take care.